Folks, if you don't give appropriate attention to what has your attention, it'll start to take more of your attention than it deserves. So the weird, strange thing here is you actually have to use your mind to get stuff off your mind. So you have to apply a process to be able to get this stuff out of there. It won't happen by itself. How do you do that? Key number one, get it out of your head. Simple, but boy, is that a big habit for most adults to change. Anything and everything that's potentially meaningful, write it down. So I'll challenge all of you. Take the next 24 hours. Keep a pad and pen with you if you don't have it already. And don't have a thought twice. Little, big, personal, professional, just get it all out. You don't have to do anything with it. Just capture anything that's pulling on your psyche that's going on there that's not on cruise control. And I guarantee you, if you do that process, the thousands of people that we've had do that process absolutely would guarantee that once they've done it, they have a whole lot better sense of control and perspective and more appropriately engaged with what they're doing and what they should be doing. Now, that's just stage one. Stage two, which is necessary, because once you do stage one, you'll still see a bunch of stuff on that list that still need more thinking. Most to-do lists are incomplete lists of still unclear things, by the way. What you see on to-do lists are things like budget, mom, dog, babysitter. You go, right, well, I understand those sort of probably indicate something that something you've got to do something about, but what exactly is the work you need to do. And that's going to be the second thing you need to do, is to take those things that you've identified that are yanking your chain, and you need to make some really specific decisions about what does the work involve. And there's two key questions you need to ask about everything on your list. What outcome am I committed to finish, so that you can define that target out there? What's the project about the budget, about the dog, about the babysitter? And identify those. And then you need to ask yourself, what's the very next action step that I need to take to move forward on that if I were going to move on it? Outcome and action, zeros and ones of productive behavior. What are we trying to accomplish? How do we allocate resources to make it happen? But you need to apply that very specifically if you want to be appropriately engaged with anything yanking your chain out there. The late, great Peter Drucker, you folks should know that, would tell every one of us as knowledge workers, the toughest admonition, your toughest work is defining what your work is. He put it in broad terms. This is very specifically what he's talking about. What is the work embedded in that, and getting very clear about that? And I guarantee you, if you sit down and take at least a few of the things off your list and make these decisions, what's the project? Write it down. What's the action step? Write it down. You will feel exponentially more appropriately engaged with your world. Never seen an exception to that. Then, of course, that's going to feel great, but then you're going to be up against another wall, because you're going to look at all that. By the way, most of you have between 30 and 100 projects right now, and most of you have between 150 and 220 next actions right now. So you're going to very quickly leave mind like water when you look at that immensity, unless you start to put it all together. So in all of that, what you're going to need are maps. You need the appropriate maps of all the projects. You need the maps of all the actions you have. And there are other maps you probably need to have. What's my job? Key areas of focus and accountability. What are the things in my personal life I need to watch and manage and take care of on a regular basis? That's another great map. So you need to build maps of all of this so that you can step back and see the whole gestalt of what your life is involved in, so that then you can make good intuitive decisions about what to do. Now, I know given, by the way, once you experience that, I've never had anybody make that list and not come up with, oh, God, that reminds me. And at least add 3 or 4 or 5 significant projects to their list they needed to that were already there, but they were just more subtle and more strategic. They hadn't identified them yet. So I guarantee you those three things. Now, I may have just jumped you back into reality and maybe reminded you that you're not a productivity ninja yet. That's okay. It doesn't take you long to get to where you want to get to about this. Very simple, folks. Just write stuff down. Decide actions and outcomes embedded in them. Get yourself a map of all of that so you can step back and take a look at it. And then, basically, you use the map to decide, okay, here's the course that we're going to go on. You then launch the ship on a trusted course in terms of short term, as well as the long horizon that you're moving on. And then on some regular basis, you need to reassess, okay, we need to take in new data, clean up, recalibrate, and refocus for the next leg of the journey.
As I look back on the last few years of my life, I realized one of my favorite things to say to myself has been, gosh, I just don't have enough time to do that. Or, oh, if only there was more time. Some variation involving time. What I've realized recently is that it was never a lack of time. It was a lack of clarity and definition and control. And when those things are lacking, strangely enough, it actually creates the illusion of having more time. At first, this all will catch up with you, as I've learned. Here's what I mean. When I don't have clarity on what's coming down the road for me, what's most important for me to be involved in right now, what the clear next steps are, and whatever the actions I'm involved in, all et cetera, et cetera, I am willing to accept inputs that I shouldn't accept. Somebody says, hey, Brett, will you make a commitment? Will you add this to your calendar? Will you do this thing? I say, sure, there must be 350 hours in a week. The result is even less control than I had before. Now, control is very important to our personal freedom. And in terms of what we're talking about here, I think it can come in two ways. So first type of control I'll describe, just for a visualization, is horizontal. So this is across all the activities, all the aspects, all the commitments, all the relationships, professional or otherwise, in our lives, right? So the breadth of, say, Brett's life. What am I involved in? What do I do for work? How do I make money? What obligations do I have? Where do I live? Recreation? Everything is covered. And I see, you know, how things work together or how things work against other aspects of life. This has nothing to do with scheduling. This has nothing to do with details. It's just a recognition of everything in which I am involved. The other type of control, you guessed it, vertical, up and down, right? The rows within each one of those columns of aspects of my life. What are the parts of doing a podcast professionally? What are the parts of being an educator? And there's a variety of ways that you could map this, but the recognition that this map is essential for organization and control, that's the important thing here. And sure, everyone's different. Maybe some people manage this just fine. Maybe some people don't recognize this at all. But that stress state of what am I forgetting? What am I not doing? What am I not managing? Open loop, open loop, open loop mindset was very, very present for me. And I was surprised how quickly it was alleviated by starting to map some of this stuff. The second chapter of the book, Getting Things Done, is called Getting Control of Your Life. And in the chapter, I want to go through just a synopsis of it. David Allen discusses five stages of getting control. All these stages can't be done at once. They need to be done one at a time. But the goal of the five stages is to, first of all, identify all open loops that might be causing stress or confusion. And ultimately, the goal is to close those loops, to get things done, to be productive. What was so appealing about getting things done? To capture the essence of what we're talking about here, what I think is most important is that this method is input, processing, and output. In other words, it's steps for obtaining knowledge and control that we've been discussing, that we're comfortable with. And it also has a variety of smaller tools and actions that we already know how to do. You know how to use a calendar. You know how to make to-do lists. It's just what's been missing, for me anyway, is some kind of coherent system into which all this stuff can be integrated and work together. So the theme is input, process, output. The input will start here. Stage one in chapter two of the book, collect. This is an inventory of all your open loops in life, all the things that you consider incomplete. All the shoulds, the need tos, the ought tos, everything. You'll have to go through your own head. You'll have to go through your computer. You'll have to go through your email. You might have to go through your calendar and make some changes. You maybe already have a bunch of hand-scratched to-do lists. What Alan suggests, what I also recommend, whether you do this physically or digitally, and you know, different needs and different realities for different people in different situations, either put everything into a physical inbox or, as I have done, a digital inbox using Evernote. I don't print a lot of stuff. I don't have a lot of paper needs or actions in life. So even though I did go out and pick up a nice little notebook that fits into the back pocket of my jeans in case I do need to quickly scratch something down, I don't have one of my devices available. I'm trying to make a habit of keeping it always with me. But still, I take those notes and then I put them into Evernote. So everything is being put into this in box in that program. If you need a physical location for in, you know, especially if you've accumulated a lot of stuff that is paper, I would highly recommend doing that. Don't let your entire space, don't let your entire world become your inbox. David Allen says in the interview that he did with Rich on History So It Doesn't Repeat, if you don't have an inbox, your home is your inbox. And if you haven't checked out that video, I recommend you do it. So we'll have to go through all the places we've made messes, at least I had to anyway, because I had made messes in several places. I actually am going back to New Hampshire today to clean up some other messes. When collection is done, every open loop is incorporated. And it doesn't mean that it has to go anywhere. I think the problem, even when we try to be organized, even when we're making a conscious effort, we want to immediately sort things as they come in, right? Instead of just capturing them. And I, from my experience anyway, all I can speak from folks is my own experience. I get quickly overwhelmed and just started batting away inputs eventually. Accepting too many, not knowing what to do with them, having this illusion of more time than I actually had, and eventually I just start batting things away and not doing them. We can't organize what's coming in. The first stage is only to collect, and then to move on to the second stage, which is processing, where things will start to make more sense. There's a tremendous amount of relief just gathering everything into one place. It might take 24 hours, it might take a weekend, it might take some people a week. But everything that I was able to control when I started to do this became a part of this stage in the process. Everything I had control over, because I was in, you know, Connecticut like 4 or 5 weeks ago, and I said, okay, my digital space is taken care of, my car, everything else. Everything else will have to wait. That's what's happening next. That's the collection process. The second stage in this is processing. What do I need to ask myself about each one of these things? First of all, what is it? It needs to be identified. In other words, is it actionable? Well, if it's not actionable, like there's nothing I can do about this right now, ideally it's trash. You can forget about it. If it's not trash, in other words, if it's needed for something that is going to happen in the future, it needs to be incubated, right? So it can go into someday maybe if it's not clear when that's going to happen, or the next place it should go, if you know when something in the future is going to happen, is onto a calendar. But if it goes onto that calendar, which also needs to be a part of a daily routine, then it's out of in. It's moved. It's been processed. If it is not something like, if it's an article that I think I'll need for a show or something in the future, it goes into reference. And reference can have, obviously, multiple categories ranging from professional to personal. I've started to create a reference. Here's an example. I have something in reference called personal where I just started putting passwords and usernames for things. This is annoying, right? Like, how many things do you need a password for? 20? And they're getting really strict about what password requirements have to be. It has to have numbers. It has to have capital letters. Well, you know, I just used to use the same password for everything. It was just one word. It was easy. We don't live in those times anymore. Apparently, the golden age of easy passwords is over, folks. And I couldn't remember, what's my eBay password? What's my Apple ID password? So now, anytime something new is created, Evernote is right there, it's open, it goes there. Reference. But what if something, on the other hand, is actionable, right? So it's either trash, incubated, or reference. If it's not actionable, but if it is actionable, well, what outcome am I committed to? That's the first what is it question. And what is the next action? And then it's processed appropriately. If it's part of a project, well, then you know what the outcome is. The project is to do this thing. Within that project, there's a list of actions. But whatever that item is in has now been processed. And we also covered many aspects of three, stage three right there, organization. If there's no action, it's tossed, it's put into incubation, or it's filed for reference. If there's an action, it goes to a list of projects or a calendar or a list of reminders of, you know, next actions or things you're waiting for other people. The fourth stage is review. Review is basically how what to do is chosen. So you have a projects list. You have a calendar, which provides basically a landscape, things that have to happen. Right? We've been for too long using calendars as organizational tools. They are not that. They do not work that way. That's something we're going to talk about more in the future. You have a hard action list of next actions. I make one every day. And what I mean by that is it's just a folder, again, in Evernote. It could be physical. It could be in some other organization program. There's obviously Evernote competitors. Next actions. And notes are put into this notebook, and those are things that I have to check off every day. Let's look at today while we're talking. Next actions. Because today felt like there was a lot to do. I have to drive to New Hampshire. I have to give myself a haircut. I have to go to the gym. I have to do laundry. I have to call my mother. I have to record an intro to part three in this series. Well, holy shit, that's six things. Anyway, getting that all out of my head, nagging feeling of things I have to do stops hogging my mental RAM and I can sit here and I can record this. It was harder to focus on this project before that simple act was done. Now, I can be present and properly engaged with this activity and all you fine folks from the internet. But those are the actions that have to be done by the end of today. What I also think is critical is to review this system on a weekly basis. Am I keeping track of the projects folders or however I'm, you know, gathering information or, you know, necessary components of a project? Am I closing the loops that I can? Am I consistently emptying my inbox? The system will evolve over time. You know, like you'll hear me and Tony say later in this show, I feel, for me anyway, that I'm still in the beginning stages of this. But the more complete I can make the system, and the more I can tailor the system to my needs, my challenges, and my goals, the more I'll ultimately trust it. So the reason why I wanted to do this series now, instead of doing it when I had mastery of it, is to see like what happens, what changes. I think it's so much more empowering and encouraging to find somebody who, just in the process of a month, I mean, not that David Allen isn't great, and he's great to listen to, and it's really inspirational, and he really explains this stuff well, probably better than, you know, I'm explaining it to you for free right now, but this was what you're witnessing in me, and what I'm describing to you, what I'm conveying to you, hopefully through my affect and my attitude, is the change that took place in 1 month. And I hope that encourages you to take this on as well. These are some things that get done weekly. First, gathering and processing all the new stuff that comes in, reviewing the system, updating our lists. Evernote, today's show brought to you by Evernote. Evernote has this little feature where when you make a list, it just has, you can highlight it, and then you know how you can make bullets in like Word or something? You can just make boxes that you can check off as you go. It feels good to be able to check off boxes, I'll tell you what. So every week, you're trying to clean, you're trying to clear, you're trying to get everything current, and you're trying to get whatever you can complete. And that's all under the review process. Next, also an important stage, the doing. So Alan, in the book, he provides some guidelines for choosing the actions to undertake. The first question in choosing actions is context. Am I in the right place to do this thing? You know, like the mind, we talked about the mind isn't a good organizational tool on its own. The head is for having ideas, not for holding them. Your mind will tell you about things when you can't do anything about them. The organization system that you have in place before this, you can say, when I'm here, these are things I need to do. When I'm in my car, these are the things I need to do. When I'm at home, these are the things I need to do. When I'm in front of the computer, these are the things I need to do. Right now, the Evernote is great for this because you don't have to have all these hand scratch lists. If you think about things while you're on the Ferris wheel at Six Flags, you can just pull out a smartphone or an iPad, or probably if you're on a Ferris wheel, you're probably going to want to have something smaller than an iPad. You don't want to be waving, you know, iPads around on Ferris wheels, folks. I don't even think I need to tell you that. But whatever the small portable device is that you have in your hand, you pull it out, you add the note to Evernote, you're good to go. It's where you need to be. At home, do this thing, you know? The second question in choosing actions is what time is available, right? When is the next hard commitment on a calendar? What kind of a window of time do I have between there? What is that enough time to get into? I will tell you that it is very, very frustrating and irritating if I start doing something like what I'm doing right now and I can't finish it. So I'm sitting outside. There's a certain kind of ambiance. There's a wind level. There's an amount of background noise. I'm in a certain kind of mood. So if I have to suddenly stop this and start recording from, like, let's say, right here later on, well, what has changed? The wind has changed. The background noise has changed. There's less caffeine pumping through my veins. Can I match the sound to what it was before? Do people know that I'm somewhere different? I'm some when different? These are the things that are on my mind. These are the things that create uneasiness for me. So I don't want to sit down and do this unless I know that this is a commitment that I can take care of today. See what I'm saying? Now, some of you with good memories who've been paying attention say, Brett, but you've got six things to do today. This is only one of them. Right. But those six things were identified, then they were scheduled, then I realize, well, geez, I've got about 3 hours. What can I do in 3 hours? Even if I futz and fumble my way through this, I can still record a half an hour of stuff in a three-hour window with very, very little pressure. The next question we should ask ourselves in choosing actions is, kind of energy do I have available? I have tried to do stuff like this at 1 o'clock in the morning because I felt like it needs to get done. That's maybe not a good time. Maybe that creates frustration that ultimately saps motivation to do things like this in the future, right? This is why so many people hate work, right? Because they procrastinated, and then when they finally had to do it to meet a deadline for school or for, you know, college or whatever, the work sucked. This is why I always recommend, when it comes to motivation, starting things slowly. When you can F around with them a little bit in the beginning, you know, leisurely. That's important. So, but if I'm doing things when I'm tired, that creates stress, that creates frustration. Is this the right time? I want to enjoy this activity. I want to be enjoying every moment of life. You know, I don't want to resign myself to the fact that, well, you know, some things just have to suck so other things can be good. If I'm doing something, if it's a part of what I'm doing as a vocation, it should be enjoyable, I believe. So making sure that I have the energy available to make that commitment to me is very important. The fourth question, geez, this is an important one, priority. You know, given the three other factors, what has the highest payoff? What is the best use of my time right now, considering the things that have to get done and when they have to get done, for who, and all the other variables that might be involved in that. Alan also talks about the types of work that could show up. And it would be great if we could only do a certain type of work, which is predefined, which is working off our next actions list. That represents total control, you know, over our day, our lives, our schedules, all that. But there's also such a thing, especially if we work in a, you know, a company, or we, you know, run our own business where we service other people. There's such a thing as work when it shows up. A phone call that I have to take. A meeting that I have to attend suddenly, right? And that question of, is this more important? Does this need to be a higher priority than whatever I'm enjoying doing right now? Because it involves other people, their calendars come into play, and it needs to be dealt with. It can happen. The best rule for work as it shows up is, how long will it take? If it's less than 2 minutes, oh man, do it. We'll talk later in this series about extending what Alan calls the 2 minute rule to a 5 minute rule, because some of the projects that we have might just take a little longer than 2 minutes, but if we can enter them into to do and take care of them, like right then, why not? It's a satisfying feeling checking things off. Making a box for a thing, doing the thing, checking the thing off. Feels nice. And another thing that you're going to hear Tony and me discuss today is the importance of reviewing work. for the purpose of long-term goals. Alan uses this metaphor of a runway and then a plane kind of going into the sky. And we've all been, this is a concept we're probably familiar with from our 11th grade public school guidance counselor, right? Where do you want to be in 5 years? Where do you want to be in 10? But who can think about that when there's debris all over the runway? Yeah, and the runway is the current actions, the things that have to be taken care of right now. When the runway is clear, planes can take off. Long-term goals can be not just made, but also worked towards. 10,000 feet, these are the current projects, the things I'm currently trying to get done. 20,000 feet, these are the larger areas of responsibility in my life, things that are bigger than current projects, things that are ongoing. 30,000 feet, 1 to 2 year goals. Where do I want to be? What do I want to have done? What new things do I want to have happening? 40,000 feet, 3 to 5 years, bigger things. And 50,000 feet, life. What do I want out of life? But getting things clear in the takeoff area, very, very important to even have the freedom necessary to think about those other things. So that is the flow of getting things done. Now, somebody posted a comment on the first episode in this series, 26 Reasons Why Getting Things Done Sucks, and then offered some alternative program that was, from what I could gather, only available for Mac and considerably more expensive than obtaining a paperback copy of the book Getting Things Done, which you could probably do on eBay for as little as $5. The truth is that maybe this is not for everybody. Getting Things Done has been criticized for people who are specifically engaged in exclusively creative pursuits, but I think everybody's life requires a certain level of organization, of left-brainedness, but it doesn't matter. Like, I don't care if you use Getting Things Done or not. What's important for me is that you capture the essence of what Getting Things Done offers in recognition and realizations that are so important for success and serenity in life. Engaging continuously, actively in this input, process, output. Closing open loops, mind like water. However you want, if you feel like you're disorganized, if you're stressed, if you don't have enough time, if you don't have enough control, whatever works for you, do it. And the process of identification and the act of living consciously and the freedom and the satisfaction of suddenly being aware and present in the right nows of life made a huge difference. So however you get there, good luck to you. This is what had worked for Richard Grove. This is what worked for Tony Myers. This is what worked for somebody who was instrumental in moving School Sucks forward when we started this podcast. A guy named Ofer, you'll hear me talk about him just a little bit in the show because he was the one who introduced the book to me. And this, most importantly to me, is what is working for me right now. I'm going to bring in some other people who are very successful and users of GTD later in this series. So the rest of the show today is me and Tony providing an introduction, talking about our experience interfacing with the material. This was recorded live 3 weeks ago. Hope you enjoy. Everybody, welcome back to the School Sucks live show for August 29th. I'm Brett, and in the studio with me tonight is Tony Myers. How you doing?
I'm doing well, and it's been a great week.
It has.
Getting to know each other a little bit, you know, going over some ideas, all that good stuff.
Yeah, we just had a fantastic dinner. We're doing everything. We've done recreation. We went to the driving range.
That's right.
It's been a terrific week. A couple of times. Once just today, but also just the other day, I've had to exclaim out loud how good I feeling like my space is more clear. Like I have more room to accept new stuff coming in.
You're already feeling it.
I am. Now, I'm far from mastery, and I think you would probably admit that, you know, you're still working through it.
Very much along that process still. And I'm sure it's something you can master, because as you become more and more productive and more creative and expand your horizons and all this sort of thing, you know, and you end up taking in a lot more information. And so it's just a matter of maintaining a balance and keeping up with it. So it's a that sort of Zen perspective where you always want to try to attain perfection, knowing that perfection might not be totally attainable. And that's something truly you can master, but you want to do your best at each moment.
Yeah, and I think it's your ready position, too. And we talked about mind like water, but there's another martial arts saying that I learned in karate when I was just a lad. Karate. I took some karate.
Really?
And, yeah, I got a couple of belts.
So you can kick my ass.
No, they give you a white when you start. And they say, here you go, junior. Here's a white belt.
White belt, yeah.
And then you do a couple, you do eight blocks, and they give you a yellow belt. So anyway, you know, the people that I work with the most in the history of School Sucks, aside from the people who've co-hosted the show with me, have been Richard Grove and Wes Bertrand, both very, very brilliant guys, and from what I can tell, highly organized. What I realized is that we were kind of on different pages for a long time. Like a year ago, I would be talking to Wes, right?
Yep.
And he would say, here, check this out, check this out, check this out. And he would say, like in a Skype conversation, there would be like 12 links that he sent. Now, he has the mind and probably the method to manage that amount of input.
Sure.
Right?
Consume all the information and make it relevant.
Right.
And useful.
And what I realized, pardon my language, folks, is that I had just kind of been this input whore. Where I was just letting everyone put all the inputs into me that they wanted all day long. Yeah, give me more. People would ask me for things. Hey, Brett, do you think we could do a show or do you think you could cover this? Yeah, come on.
Lay it on. See what happens.
Exactly. Give it to me.
After a couple of years of doing that?
Well, it doesn't. You can't possibly keep track of all that stuff if you don't have a system. But the other problem is you get this feeling, right, that even though you can't see it, it's not like you have a stack of stuff that's like, oh, look at all that stuff I've got to get to.
If only it was that simple.
It's just, it's more nebulous than that.
Yes.
You're like, I must be forgetting or not processing or not dealing with so many things right now.
Yep.
So we have been, Tony longer than me, I think, using this method of getting things done, which is also the title of a book by David Allen. Now, I think the first thing we should do to set a good example for the people who are listening to this.
So it's good to set examples.
Yes, absolutely. We're trying to, you know, persuade them to adopt this method for themselves or something similar because it is highly variable. The first thing we should do is define what success means for us by 9 o'clock tonight with this show. What are we trying to accomplish? What are our outcomes? More importantly,
what are our next actions?
What are our actions?
That's right.
So what we want to try and do to do for you tonight is first tell you what these tools are. And we're not going to go into a tremendous amount of detail because we might even do other shows about the tools that work with this system
this is
in
really
the future.
A whole like series of shows potentially.
Right.
It's ever evolving. You know, it's a beautiful process because, like I said, as more stuff comes in, you have different ways to categorize it and perform next actions and get projects done and have different ideas of what you want to do in your life.
So,
and you started by opening up saying, like, you know, there's all these thoughts or ideas or just things you can't name, but they're kind of nagging at you. You know, they're kind of eating at the back of your head a little bit, just preventing you. Because it would be so much easier, right? If we just walk into our house, and this is how most people probably have it, and there's stuff everywhere. The stuff, and be like, well, at least I know there's a pile of shit I kind of need to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not always that easy. Sometimes it's a bit more abstract. Sometimes we pile that shit up here.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's sort of the problem, you know.
And it leads to uneasiness and even disorientation frustration. And, you know, it can even hurt our sense of self-efficacy because we feel or we have that subtle feeling we're not getting stuff done. Second thing is we're going to tell people where they can obtain them or how they can obtain them.
Be useful.
And we hope we can persuade you to make time and devote the energy to learning this method for yourself.
Persuasive rhetoric.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we master it?
So that's what we're setting out to do. Those are the rewards of identification. Now we know where we're going and what we're trying to do.
That's right.
So I think the first thing we should just talk about ways that you can consume this
method, mm-hmm. the ways that you can learn it. There is a book. Do we have the book, Candy? You
yes,
have the book, Candy. There it is. Getting Things Done by David Allen. And there is an audio book available. What I do, here's if I want to try and process a lot of information very quickly, and this is available, these two things are available. Like I have the book and there's an audio book that's relatively affordable.
Yep.
I will put the audiobook on my iPod and play it at 2x the speed, which is a little fast. I hope no one's listening to my podcast at that speed because you'll miss all the little nuances of my dramatic pauses.
Your podcast has a subtle humor to it.
Yeah. You really need to listen to School Sucks at 1x. Okay. But with an audiobook, if you have the visual of the book right there, you could probably even go a little higher than 2x the speed. So that's what I've been doing. I have a challenge. I mean, focus is what's next. The next discussion that we should incorporate into this series is focus, because that's important.
And it ties right into the whole concept of the method.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because when there's more scatter of everything, it's harder to focus.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Our mind literally cannot deal with all the open loops, is that sort of buzzword he coined.
Yeah.
And that just all these things we're not naming. But they're sitting in the back of our head. We don't even know sometimes that they're there. We just know we have that feeling like something's not right.
Yeah,
something needs to get done. It exacerbates many times and other issues. We get frustrated for maybe a relationship we're in, or we're out with friends and something goes wrong. And all of a sudden, something that's been already nagging in our consciousness, that exacerbates it and it turns into a big blow-up situation where you just can't control emotions. And, it can get out of hand pretty quickly.
Right.
It's something that we don't think about, having all this stuff on our minds. But it's like he said, would you want to enter a fight if you're a martial artist and be surrounded by a whole group of thugs and have a bunch of shit on your mind, a bunch of stuff you haven't done, a bunch of open loops, as he said?
Yeah.
I think you want your mind to be still right in the moment.
When you're in that situation, in the movies, apparently, you also get to fight each guy one at a time.
Yeah, that's also very convenient.
Right. So
quick cuts.
But that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Doing
that's
one fight
metaphor,
at a time.
One fight at a time.
Yeah. That's the regular book and the audio book, but you guys also learned about this through, I believe, a lecture series that I know very little about, so maybe you can tell people what it is and where they can get it.
Absolutely. We first came upon the whole Getting Things Done method from someone who hosts a podcast, and he has a couple books. His name's Jan Ervin. I'm sure many people know about him.
Mm-hmm.
He runs Gnostic Media, and GnosticMedia.com is his website. And essentially, he gave us this tool, which had been provided to him at a previous job he had, essentially to help us get organized when we were getting the studio all, started to be built and all that stuff. We were getting all this stuff in. We had boxes and boxes and trying to figure out how we're going to put it all together and how we're going to make it work. So it was a perfect timing situation. Now, at the time, he only gave us it wasn't the audiobook, it was a lecture series. And I actually found that to be pretty profound. I've been pretty much using the concepts he presented in the lecture series and not so much in the book, but the book is much more detail. It's the concepts are better explained. But something about the lecture series just helped me immediately grasp it. That was the key for me. The way he explained, because he's in a organization of a group of executives.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting there just talking about how can they immediately get this method. What can they do to start employing this method? So he's trying to speak from a perspective of not dumbing it down, but making it very generalized. And I thought that was very useful at the time because we didn't have the time to go through the entire book. We went through sections of the book just to juxtapose the two. But, I like the idea of employing a lot of different modalities for learning, even
right.
if it's the same topic. So you said you listen to the audiobook, you speed it up a little bit. That's actually a really good idea because it at least helps you get some general concepts, especially if you're just doing other tasks. Something will stick in your brain.
Yeah.
Something always pops in there that you find useful. And then you can go back and reference it from the book when you have more time to focus on just that concept and build it out a little bit. So for me, the lecture series was actually really, that was the key. And we actually all stumbled upon it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Rich, Lisa, and I was up here working with them, and Jan sent us over this whole method, and we at first thought, corporate, whatever, it's a whole management system, it's not a big deal, it's
right,
not anything
right.
really going to be that useful. But then we started listening to it, and interestingly enough, Rich, God love him, he instantly got it.
Right, yeah.
He instantly got it, And he realized that it was really the same process of the trivium.
Right.
And which we had been promoting for quite some time, just that, you know, process to learn anything for yourself, a method to learn anything for yourself.
Yeah.
And so you can remove that sort of middleman, hierarchical authority structure, whatever you want to call it. And so it's just interesting because it's presented in a different perspective. It's presented for a different audience, presented for a group of executives. But here we found it tied in just with everything we do in life, like the way we cook our food, the way we deal with just like having to take the car into the shop or anything we want to do, cleaning the house, anything that needs to get done. You know, this applies ubiquitously across the board.
Yeah.
And that was the key, because realizing that the trivium is a sort of abstract method. It's something like you have to explain these, you know, weird concepts like epistemology and metaphysics and try to get. It's very, you know, it's not something palpable, tangible, we can really feel or touch. But we realized just going through the steps of using it, our lives became a lot easier.
Right.
And this was pretty much the same idea, the same method, just presented in a different language, a language for business executives. But, you know, we found it much easier to apply it, just his method, for just as a fundamental step, a cornerstone, if you will, for building upon the concepts we found in the trivium. And, you know, perpetuating those ideas forward. And so we've discovered it, I would say, probably about a year, year and a half ago. And we started using it pretty much immediately. But I will say this, we started about at the same time. And we only incorporated, and this is kind of the key, and we'll get more into this as the show continues, but the whole habits, you know, we're trying to build habits. How do we actually get this to stick? How do we use this consistently? And that was sort of a difficult process, because we only took the trick the way we did it. We took what was most immediately useful for us, what we realized we needed to do. It was something high on our priority.
Mm-hmm.
And we employed those steps first. So for me, it was just general buckets, action items, project lists. I had like four buckets, essentially just general categories. Because before, like I think everyone has, a bunch of email, a bunch of papers laying around. And I would just leave it like that.
So. Let's talk about the essence for the benefit of our live audience, because I will do an introduction for the podcast version of this show where we're kind of distilling this down to the essence of what this is.
Yeah.
Now, simply put, it's input, processing, and output, just like the trivium is.
Yep.
And it's ubiquitous. I was preparing a lesson today that I have to give as like a mock lesson for an interview for this SAT company that I might be working with.
Okay.
So I'm looking at this problem and I'm thinking, how would I explain this? And it's the kind of problem that I had explained in my life to kids hundreds of times, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then I look at it today and I say, this is input, process, output.
That's right.
Gather the relevant information. Like what mathematical background knowledge? A circle has 360 degrees. Formula for the area of a circle is pi times r squared.
Yep.
Right? Radius of a circle is half the diameter. Yep. Like all the background knowledge that you learned in 9th or 10th grade about circles, you call that back.
Yep.
You input all of the information they're giving you in the problem. Then you start processing them. You start seeing how they can combine together to produce new pieces of information. As that process continues, you eventually have your output, which is the answer.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
So this is everywhere. And that's what we're talking about. And that's, I think, one of the things that finally for me, I said, it's time for me to read this book. I've been looking at this book, and I'll tell you the story in a minute of how I came to obtain it. I've been looking at this book, no kidding, for 3 years. That copy of the book
Where
that you held
first
up,
get your book?
Somebody gave it to me.
Okay. That's right.
A Free Stater named Ofer used to buy copies of this book and hand them out to Free Staters.
Wow, so he found it quite useful.
He would say, hey, you talk about getting things done. You know, here's a book you should read. And I looked at it and I said, boy, yeah, you know, someday I'll read this. Well, Ofer, I did read it. And actually, no, I haven't read the whole book yet. But
that's a beautiful, you know, show of essentially going to people with a libertarian mind or just a freedom mind, you know, essentially saying, hey, look, they're trying to do great things. They're trying to get the word out. Here's a process that will help you, you know, make that a little bit more efficient and can hopefully spread.
And he was one of the most productive people that I ever saw.
Really?
And he could work. I mean, he was also highly motivated. He could work like 18 hours in a row, highly focused. Mm. But I didn't realize like all these things, because we lived with each other for a while while we were building the original version of SchoolSucksProject.com. And he was kind of I was really like his number two when it came to like pushing School Sucks, because he contacted me. He said, this is great. Let's get it out there.
So he had materials.
Yeah. He had materials printed. He was going and helping with marketing. and he did the website. So at
awesome.
I'm his
That's...
assistant, right? He's like, okay, I'm doing all this stuff. Go record an episode and put it out. But I'm watching all these things that he does, that he did, or the way he lived. I'm saying, this is the routines of a madman, because he had this. We had this office, right?
He had a lot
and
of labels.
He had the shelf, and everything was labeled.
Yep.
Everything was labeled.
Someone has some sort of OCD. It's like, well, I just have to have everything perfectly in order.
But what the piece of knowledge that I was missing at the time was this method.
Yep.
So that was how I came to obtain the book. The other thing too is that when you have the book and you start to get a sense of somebody's writing style, you know how much. I don't want to call it fluff, because I'm not saying there's anything in the book that isn't important.
Right.
But when he gives you the basic principle, and you capture that principle and you say, okay, I got it. He'll say, for example, and he'll give you an anecdote. So that's a time where you can kind of back away from the intensity with which you're paying attention.
Right.
And just kind of check back. Am I getting this? Am I capturing the full picture of what's going on here?
And it provides context. And that's the word I was just looking for. It provides sort of context. Sometimes you're not always getting the essence of each concept and how it immediately relates to you, but you are getting a sort of context, the way in which it can be used.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all these different properties of how to go about employing some of these concepts might not stick the first time, but you're getting a sort of context to it. I think that helps build a framework where in which you then can jump into the book and really develop these concepts to make it relatable and usable for yourself.
So everything that we've talked about, and the people who are listening to the podcast will have heard three shows devoted to either the importance of present moment awareness and how that relates to productivity, or, like I said, this method.
When we talk about control, you know, we talked about how to gain control of a situation that's crazy, you know, out of control, and what method you have to employ. That whole capture, process, collect, organize, review.
Mm-hmm.
The next step then, once you get things under control, how do you rank these based on your own internal value structure? And I think this ties into what our intention was at the beginning of this whole endeavor, which is defining success, I believe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we get into the idea of defining success. We move into perspective, because defining success really is based on your own internal value structure.
Yeah.
What do you value? And the only way to do that is once you have things somewhat under control and you're able to deal with new information and properly categorize it and process it, you know, you can start gaining perspective. And this is like, he has different metaphors he employs to try to make it essentially digestible for the audience, you know, something easy for them to understand. And I think he employs a metaphor of essentially altitudes. Like, what are your ideas of 50,000 feet, 40,000 feet, 30,000 feet, 10,000 feet,
right.
2010, et cetera. And so once you have things pretty well organized and fairly in control, you can start analyzing things.
The runway is clear.
The runway is clear. That's exactly right. For anyone that might be confused, externalization, we kind of cover pretty in depth.
Absolutely.
But the idea of naming it is a sort of way of externalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're capturing it on paper, whether you're in the shower or in the middle of the night and wake up with a great idea, instead of trying to hold it all in the mind, which does nothing but processing, you just get it out.
Yeah.
And so that's really the first two steps, observation and identification.
Yeah.
And so that's the sort of externalization process. And so you have like essentially two constituents here. You have positive outcomes and next actions. So first, the positive outcomes is sort of like, what do you want out of this?
Mm-hmm.
It's being present in the moment and say, what do I actually want out of this? What does this mean to me internally? And so then how do you, the next step is like, what next actions do I have to take to get that positive outcome? And the juxtaposition of those two things equals priorities, because that's where you're going to prioritize then essentially how important different aspects of, you know, positive outcomes apply in your life. So what's your goal for 10 years from now, 5 years from now, 2 years from now? What are your immediate projects you have available to you? And then what are your next actions to kind of get things moving? And so you can start prioritizing based on your own value structure what success or a positive outcome might mean to you ultimately.
Yeah. It's another visualization that he provided in his discussion with Rich, David Allen.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know, if your ship is sinking,
yeah, sure, that's
and right. If you want to tie that to the other, you're stuck on the runway and there's clutter on the runway. You know, if your ship is sinking, it doesn't matter. You don't care which direction it's pointed.
Yeah.
You know, you're only dealing with plugging holes.
Yep.
So being able to deal with all of the noise allows you to start seeing the longer picture. And, you know, that was the trick for me is that life changes too.
Yeah.
And if you are doing significant or undergoing some kind of dramatic change in your life and you don't have all of this stuff, you know, rooted to where it where it needs to go as it comes, it's very difficult to re-strategize.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you know, I could tell you my 50,000 altitude 3 years ago. I knew what it was going to be. We were going to run a company. We were going to franchise it all over New England. We were going to sell the one we started, and I don't. Then I was going to retire and find something else to do. You know, that was that was the 5-year plan, and that got scrapped. You know, so now I'm trying to get the runway clear again. You know, I'm trying to get the boat. It's we've got all these travel metaphors, folks, but you know, whether it's the hole in the boat
so
plugged, the runway clear for takeoff. You know, I'd like to start looking at the longer picture again, because it's nice. There's a real feeling of serenity that comes from being able to take all of these incompletes
right.
that your mind just haphazardly seems to toss into your consciousness and develop a reference point or understand a reference point for what that incomplete means as complete instead of just an open loop that's going to create discomfort, stress.
Right. And so, you know, this kind of ties in with the last question when I did a show with called First Principles with Rich and Melissa Simeone, a couple members from the, I think Derek as well, from the members of the Tragedy and Hope community, tried to discuss first principles of philosophy. And in it, like at the very end, I believe Rich asked a very interesting and quite profound question. And it gets back to the idea I think David Allen's presenting here. So you have these high altitudes, right? You might be have this 10-year thinking or 5-year, whatever, like where you want to be then. How do you make that abstraction in your mind, which is just in your mind, it's an idea of where you want to be, how do you make that actually match up with reality? And that's the key. And that's where our happiness ultimately lies, if like we can have a certain consistency of expectations. And mm-hmm. That's what I think, mm-hmm. like with your, you know, getting everything kind of under control again and having employing consistent methods, you're more consistently or more consistent in what you can expect out of, you know, how you go about your next actions and complete projects. And then those will ultimately build up then how you reprioritized in a different perspective, these different, you know, higher altitudes of thinking or ideas of where you might want to be. And so I think the idea is how can we match up our abstractions or ideas of what we think we should be or where we should be at to, you know, reality, and what steps do we need to take to bridge that gap so we can have a consistent level of expectation. Because then if we can expect what we can get out of reality, you know, that ultimately is where a lot of times our serenity and a lot of our happiness lies.
Everyone, closing thoughts for today and a suggestion before next time, to use a GTD term right here, we're going to call this the mind sweep. You heard me mention this earlier, and maybe some of you have a very paper intensive lifestyle with things coming in the mail and things being printed out, etc., etc. Many of you might have a strictly digital organization need. So as far as the mind sweep is concerned, the aspects of this is that anything that is hogging that mental RAM, anything that has been gnawing at you, gets out of your mind or out of some place where it's gnawing at your mind, because it's in that place and it shouldn't be there, and into in a place where everything can go and eventually start being processed. Maybe you should take 24 hours to do this. Hey, we've got a weekend coming up, I believe. Maybe that would be a good time. And if you've decided to take my suggestion and use the program Evernote, you've got a notebook called In where this stuff can start to go. And this will dictate how Evernote will be customized for your needs and your uses going forward. I found this to be basically the linchpin for me of being able to implement getting things done. This free piece of software that I encourage everyone to download, mess around with, and start using. So if you start moving, it's real easy to create notes. If you're brand new to Evernote, you just click Control N in whatever notebook you want. You can put a title. You can do it from any device. Like I said, you can incorporate pictures. You can incorporate audio files, like recordings from your phone. The possibilities are voluminous, we'll say. So doing the mind sweep, getting things out of email, getting things out of some old inbox, off to-do lists, off calendars, if they don't have firm dates. Like, don't use your calendar as a to-do list. And, you know, anything that's swimming around in those heads of yours. And get it out, externalize it, see how you feel. And we'll continue this soon. Thanks for listening, and take care.